Our next case is 10-857, Lisa G. Huff et al. Versus First Energy Corporation et al. Helen's first attorney is John Delek. Mr. Delek?
Thank you, Chief Justice. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal of my time.
Pardon me?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. May it please the court. In reviewing this case, the 11th District Court of Appeals agreed with the trial court that there was no evidence that Ohio Edison breached any traditional tort negligence duty. It found that Ohio Edison had no knowledge of this tree, that the accident was unforeseeable, that the tree in question did not pose a threat to Ohio Edison's utilities.
Well, counsel, isn't that the crux of the whole thing? You know, what was Ohio Edison doing with this tree inspection program that they had instituted? It was, was it to look out for the homeowners' trees and shrubbery, or was it to review this with an eye towards what will jeopardize the Ohio Edison process of delivery of electricity?
That is the issue, Your Honor, and it's very important to stress that this tree was not in Ohio Edison's easement. It is not Ohio Edison's property. It was the property of the homeowner who was at one point a party to this litigation. The agreement between Ohio Edison and Asplund, which incorporates the vegetation management guidelines, expressly describes the scope of the services as directed towards removing vegetation which will interfere with the operation, construction, or maintenance of the utility lines.
But they modified this tree, did they not?
There is no evidence, and the Court of Appeals acknowledged this, and none of these findings were appealed by the appellees. There was no finding that Ohio Edison or its contractor, in this case Asplund, ever touched this tree. There was a biased crown in the tree, which
there was a what?
A biased crown. The top of the tree leaned towards the roadway, mm-hmm. And there was speculation that was the result of utility work in the past. But as far as the crucial point in 2001, upon which the appellees attempted to create liability for Ohio Edison and Asplund, there was no indication that this tree was ever touched by Asplund. And it was unrefuted that Ohio Edison never had any employee at this site for any reason. The arrangement between Asplund and Ohio Edison or any of its tree contractors is that if there's a tree that is outside of the normal expertise or discretion of the tree trimmer, it calls that to Ohio Edison's attention, and Ohio Edison would send out a forestry supervisor, one of its own employees, to appraise the situation. And it's unrefuted that no one ever called this tree to Ohio Edison's attention. And it's important to note, because it was somewhat muddled in the appellee's brief, there's a suggestion that Ohio Edison actually did come to the site. They did not. The inspection by Ohio Edison, its forestry technician, occurs after the work is done, and they do not do a tree-by-tree inspection. They stand at the end of a roadway, they view their lines, and they make sure, which is consistent with the purpose of the contract, that no tree is growing into the lines or leaning into the lines. This is a highly regulated industry. The PUCO approves these vegetation management plans. The only purpose that even Asplund was out there in 2001 was for the purpose of improving or ensuring reliability of electrical service. Which leads me to the Court of Appeals decision to try to morph some third-party beneficiary theory into this case. First of all, they say that if there's a duty in this case, and they ruled out any duty on a tort or negligence basis, they said if there's a duty in this case, it arises from the terms of the contract. Foreseeability is not an issue, which I think is a gross bastardization of both tort law and contract law.
Well, it's a fact that this tree was within the inspection zone. Am I right about that?
It was on the edge of the inspection zone, yes. It leaned out away from the inspection zone.
But it was within the 20-foot inspection zone.
If you would have found 20 feet, the trunk of the tree touched it, but then it progressed upwards, it progressed out of it. So the majority of the tree was outside, but yes, Justice O'Donnell, it did touch the inspection zone. But the inspection, and this is something that was muddled both throughout the arguments of the cases and by the experts that the appellees hired, the inspection is not an arboricultural inspection. And that's a significant difference in this case, because the burden that the plaintiff's expert attempted to place upon Ojai Weddison and Asplund was to check the health of this tree.
Well, the contract said that, if I read it right, trees that are expected to be removed include priority trees located adjacent to the transmission clearing zone corridor that are leaning toward the conductors, are diseased, or are encroaching the clearing zone corridor. So generously read, you could say this tree was diseased and it was within that inspection zone.
Justice O'Donnell, but the issue in this case is it, or the portion of it that remains, is a third party beneficiary issue. The main purpose of this court or any court in determining a contract or the rights under it is to determine the intent of the parties. Neither of the parties to the contract, Ojai Weddison nor Asplund, dispute what those terms mean. The Court of Appeals suggested that diseased alone could be a significant factor or could be the determinative factor in removing this tree, but that is not how in daily operation between Ojai Weddison and his contractors this works.
Well, the contract said further then that the inspection manual required the contractor to utilize safety equipment in completing the work and to, quote, plan and conduct the work to adequately safeguard all persons and property from injury. So I think the theory being advanced is that had that been complied with, all persons would include the public. And I think that the claim is, anyway, that there's a third-party beneficiary right pursuant to that, so we're supposed to interpret that language as to whether it encompasses the plaintiff.
That is, in fact, the theory that the Court of Appeals came up with. And a couple of points in that regard, Your Honor, is...
Well, is it your view that the public is incorporated or encompassed within that language, or does that language mean something different only to those who were involved at the time of the clearing? Or is there another interpretation?
As in the case of the North Fork and Western case, which was discussed in this court's Hill precedent, this provision is commonly accepted and has been historically interpreted and followed between the companies as an on-the-job safety provision or safety protection provision. In other words, while Asplund is out there on the road trimming branches, removing trees, that provision comes into play. The Court of Appeals interpretation that it was to create perpetual insurance for anybody traveling on the roadway is not the intent of either of the parties to this contract.
Your view is several years after they've left, it doesn't obtain to members of the general public.
That's right. And actually, the reason that provision is in the contract is because when Ojai Weddison and its contractor Asplund put this contract together, they wanted it to be clear between them, and probably more appropriately, Ojai Weddison wanted to be clear to Asplund that Ojai Weddison wasn't going to go out to the work site and set up safety barricades and all the things that are necessary to protect the work site. The purpose of that provision in the agreement is to say, Asplund, while you're out there working, you're the one that has to protect the work site.
Other than the 11th District, are there any other cases where there's been a third-party application of that contract, to your knowledge?
No, Your Honor, and that was the point that I wanted to make. If the court would review, and I think I pointed out in my brief, the process of this case through the courts, never did the appellee herself ever assert that she had any third-party beneficiary rights under the contract. That whole concept arose in the Court of Appeals in an oral argument. So not only did Asplund and Ojai Weddison perceive this contract as not creating third-party beneficiary rights. Appellees themselves, until the Court of Appeals came up with this alternative theory, did not believe so. And as to my client, the one additional point that I wanted to make is the Court of Appeals says foreseeability is not an issue in determining the duty in this case, which I think is contrary to express wording in the Hill versus Sauna trial case, which cites Menifee. But they say it relies, if there's a duty, it relies upon the terms of the contract. And then they cite one sentence out of a multi-page contract that says the contractor shall do X and such. If you're relying upon the words of the contract, which it should be clear, Ohio Edison is not the contractor. That obligation has no relevance to it, and we believe, even in regard to Asplund, it has no obligation because the party's intent was that was an on-the-job safety provision.
Counsel, let's hear from Asplund's counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Thank you. Mr. Mash, your co-counsel has saved you 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
Well, I'll try and be very brief, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Cliff Mash. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Asplund Tree Service Company. Justice O'Connor, you really put your finger on the central issue here is what's the purpose of this contract between Ohio Edison Utility Company and Asplund, which is a company that's retained by Ohio Edison in order to provide overhead tree clearance purposes. Under the Hill v. Sonnet trial case, which everyone agrees is the law that's the law of the land as it relates to this, is that in order to be an intended beneficiary to a party, the contract has to be entered into with the direct or primary benefit of the person claiming to be a third-party beneficiary. And separate and apart from that, the party claiming that status has to prove that the promisee, in this case that would be Ohio Edison, had a duty to the intended beneficiary and that the performance of the promise fulfilled that duty. As to the first issue, you know, was this contract entered into for the direct and primary benefit of the general public walking on the public road? I respectfully submit that when reviewing this contract in its totality, one cannot come to that conclusion. The objective of the contract specifically defines that all work to be performed under all documents is for maintaining the reliability of electrical services. The scope of services defined in the vegetation management specification indicates that the purposes of the services are to protect and preserve the utility infrastructure. There is nothing in this contract that indicates that the purpose or the primary or direct purpose of this contract is for the purpose of protecting the general public walking on public roads. A case that I think bears important emphasis in addressing this issue is the case that I brought to this court's attention in the supplemental authority, and that's the Terry versus Hancock case. That's a case where a utility company retains Murray to do the same kinds of services that Asplund was asked to do by Ohio Edison. Ohio Edison goes on a landowner's property, cuts down some trees, and the landowner's furious because he didn't want those trees cut down. He tries to avail himself to the technical requirements in the vegetation specification management that govern that project and says, I'm an intended beneficiary, and these trees shouldn't have been cut down, and I should be entitled to that. And the court looked at the purpose of that, and it said there's no way that this was entered into for the primary and direct benefit of the landowner. You don't have the right to assert rights under the contract. And my concern with the appellate court's case is I think that it blurs concepts of tort liability and contract liability. I would respectfully submit that you can't look at this contract and say that Ohio Edison and Asplund entered into this contract to protect third parties on public roads. And I would further submit that there is no law under Ohio law that Ohio Edison owes a duty to the general public while on public streets. Otherwise, so
who owes the duty then with regard to this tree in your mind?
In my mind, the municipality, who at one time was a party to this case, has an obligation to make sure that trees running along roads in the municipality don't pose a danger to the residents.
Not the homeowner.
Well, the homeowner, Your Honor, the homeowner obviously under Ohio law has a duty to make sure that trees don't pose threats to people as well. And the homeowner was in this case and the homeowner settled out. And what we're left with now is You know, is this court going to allow this case to stand, which imposes a duty on utility companies and companies such as Asplund to maintain millions of trees that would be located along the thousands and thousands of public roads in Ohio that have telephone lines and power lines running along to that?
Well, Counsel, quite frankly, I'm thinking that you're the contractor and your company is hired to remove trees. And the utility company sends out an inspector anytime you want to remove a tree that is over 33 inches in girth.
Correct.
Because it's an expensive proposition, for one thing, and they want to make sure it's necessary. Well, I would think that your company would want to remove as many trees as they possibly can because it's lucrative. So if this was a tree that was threatening vegetation for the operation and the preservation and delivery of electrical services, your company would have removed it.
Our obligation under the contract, and Justice O'Donnell cited to it, there's a tree removal provision that you cited to, Your Honor, that I respectfully submit doesn't come into play. That tree removal provision that you recited deals with a sub-transmission and a transmission clearing zone. The utility lines were at issue in this case were distribution lines. Those are separate clearing zones that are defined in the statute. The only evidence presented at the trial court level as to what we were supposed to, the trees we're supposed to move, are trees that constitute an obvious risk to the utility infrastructure. Mm-hmm. There was no evidence in this case that this tree constituted an obvious risk to the utility structure. Our contractual obligation is to make sure we take down those trees that constitute a threat to utility lines. If those trees don't pose a threat, we don't have the contractual obligation.
Counsel, when this tree was blown down, did it hit the power line?
It did not, Your Honor. There's no evidence that the tree hit the power line, and there was no evidence in the record that the house lost electrical power as a result of the storm because of the way the tree fell.
And this last point that you mentioned convinced the author of the appellate opinion to change position on reconsideration. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Judge Rice, when she changed her vote, indicated that the standard sought to be imposed by the majority was unreasonable and unworkable. And we would respectfully submit that this court recognize that onerous burden and overrule the appellate court and once again reinstate the decision by the trial court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Beatrice.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm David Beatrice. I represent the appellee in this case. I want to thank you for the honor of appearing before you, although my firm has on a number of occasions written briefs here. This is my first opportunity, as I just celebrated my 25th anniversary in the greatest profession, to argue before you. And quite frankly, I hope my arguments and my brief are concomitant with the respect this court deserves. I shouldn't admit this, but I had as much butterflies coming here this morning as I did some 25 and a half years ago going across the street to take my bar examination. The ultimate issue in this case, Your Honor, is the duties that go to the general public. And although appellant's counsel is probably going to be shocked, I agree with them. It is too onerous of a burden for this court to make them inspect every tree. And the court's always subjected to competing interest of Ohio Edison and to provide utility services to the residents of Ohio at a reasonable rate and the competing interest of the general public. But this court can be King Solomon here because there is a middle ground here. And the middle ground is this. This tree was 46 inches in diameter. It was 90 feet tall and it was sheared on one side, meaning Ohio Edison did something to this tree to keep it off of its lines. And we think the duty changes.
So is that in the record?
That is in the record. It's in the expert's report. Our expert says, Chief Justice, that there's no way that the top of this tree with it's a big tree, and so you imagine 90 feet up and all one side of it is sheared. There's no way that that's a natural occurrence. The burden.
Counsel, just about every single tree on my street is sheared like that by the electric lines. Why? How does that create a duty to the public?
Well, if it didn't, Your Honor, think about the danger to the public. If Ohio Edison...
But if that's, you know, your only other choice is to take a tree down entirely. If you can trim a tree so that it doesn't impose any danger to the utility line, is there something wrong with that?
Yes, Justice Stratton, because this tree was severely diseased, and our expert opined that any tree expert or anyone with trees going through and viewing this would have seen that this tree was in danger of coming down. And appellant's counsel keep...
And why would that not be, if it was on the roadway, in possibly impugning the roadway, why would that not be the municipality's obligation if the tree was diseased versus the utility?
Because, Your Honor, that was within their prescriptive easement, and they altered this tree. They're the ones that weakened the tree, not the municipality.
But is there proof that they altered the tree? Let's just start there.
Your Honor...
You say that your expert speculates, based on his experience and knowledge, that this tree had to be modified in some way. Okay, but is there any evidence in the record that it was Ashplund, the utility, or even the city that modified this tree?
I would tell you that the evidence is reason and common sense, because a tree
just answered the question yes or no. Is there direct evidence in the record that any of the defendants in this matter modified this tree?
There would be no, Your Honor, there is
all right,
no.
All right.
It would be literally impossible, Chief Justice, for anyone to say that on that tree they did it. But just because I wake up in the morning and I don't see it snowing, I didn't see it snowing and I see snow on the ground, it's reasonable for me to infer that it snowed the night before. Just like if this tree is sheared on one side and I didn't physically see someone shear the tree, the only reason to shear the tree would be to protect the utility line.
Counsel, let me back you up to assist in understanding. This is a transmission line rather than a local service line, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so it's not out at the street, right? The power line itself, or is it out at the street?
The power line is on like someone's property, you know, like when you're traveling down a rural road and you see these power lines. The tree was within that. It was.
Yeah, but where was the transmission line? Was it out at the curb or was it back on the property, the transmission line?
It would have been back towards the property.
It's back.
Well, it's not back. It's within 20 feet of the easement. It's within the inspection
zone. I'm interested in where the transmission line is in relation to the street, first of all.
The transmission line, this tree fell northeast.
Not the transmission line, not the tree. How far back is the transmission line?
Feet-wise, I just...
It's back from the street.
It's back from the street.
This is not a utility pole out on the street.
No, all right. No, Justice.
And then this tree was somebody's once very nice tree in their lawn, right?
That's correct.
And the tree is when this accident happened is deformed. It doesn't look like it would be in its natural state.
Just like Justice Stratton said, yes, yeah. It's sheared on one side. That's correct.
Well, but here's, and if I understand what you acknowledged at the beginning, you're really saying it's a tort theory that you were always operating on, and it's a tort theory that you should have dodged summary on rather than a contract theory.
Our position is that we wanted a day in court.
Right.
We wanted to be able to develop the facts, and that how we got
But the facts that you tried to develop were that this company or their subcontractor damaged the tree.
That's correct.
And made it vulnerable to an act of God and that injured this woman.
Yes, except for the one provision. This was a moderate summer storm that comes through Ohio.
Your theory was they damaged the tree, and once they damaged the tree, they should have fixed it or cut it down in some fashion.
We advanced a number of arguments, Justice Pfeiffer. The centerpiece.
But they were tort theories, not contract
theories. They were tort theories, and we argued the contract. We put that contract into evidence. That contract is there. The court was struggling with how they get to the duty. That's ultimately what's here.
The duty's easy if they damage the tree.
I agree with you.
But the way I read the trial judge's entry on summary is, and this is the direct answer to the chief's question, on page 2 of his decision, He said, plaintiff's expert Steiner also opines that a branch was removed from the tree near the point of breakage and the power line side of the, some decades prior to 2004. Additionally, the same expert also states the branch was largely grown over the time of the incident. Upon deposition, Steiner, that's your expert, admitted that he could not testify to a reasonable degree of probability that said branch one was cut off versus falling off on its own. A 2-inch hole in the subject tree near the scar, along with branch two, is primarily blamed by the plaintiffs for the tree trunk's interior decay. Concerning branch two, Dr. Steiner states that his report that the most visible sign of structural weakness was the presence of the unusually large cavity in the trunk at a height of 15 feet. And then he goes on to say, upon deposition, Steiner once again was unable to state that with the requisite degree of certainty whether or not branch two was cut off or broke. There's no evidence that Hyatt-Essen or its agents were at the property after 2001 until June of 2004. And so he essentially says there's a failure of any proof that the damage to the tree or the lopsided nature of the tree is a direct result of actions by the defendants. Yeah. And that's why he grants summary. That's my take on his explanation.
That's my take also, Your Honor, and that's why we think it's not appropriate for summary judgment, because also in that expert's report, he says this could have not occurred, the way this tree became unbalanced could not have occurred by natural occurrence. If this court were to adopt the appellant's position, literally, then trees next to playgrounds that are sheared, as long as they're not going to hurt the property line or the lines, it doesn't matter. And they've actually said that. They don't care about the general public. And we think that there is a middle ground. I understand that there are thousands of trees in Ohio, but once they undertake to do something with this tree, there then is a duty concomitant with that, whether that arises by the contract as a third-party beneficiary.
Mr. Beatrice, do you think that there's a factual issue as to whether Asplund cut this tree or not? Or is that a matter that we know they didn't, and your expert simply says someone did, but we're not sure who?
We know that in May they were there twice to cut down two trees around this tree.
Yes.
And that they were there again in May of 2001 to do a general inspection. So they were through there twice in May of 2001.
But is there any evidence that they cut this tree? They claim
this
they did
particular
not.
Tree.
They claim they did not.
No,
we know someone cut it, but we don't know that they cut it.
Well, that's correct. But we know that it could not have occurred naturally the way this tree.
Well, obviously,
was,
circumstantial evidence tells us someone cut it, but you have to prove that they did it.
It would be literally, the logs they keep don't say this tree.
There's a part of the contract that says that they have an obligation to remove diseased trees. Is your theory that the tree was diseased and they should have removed it? And they claim that it doesn't apply because this wasn't a transmission line.
They were there. That our expert says anybody in this area looking at this tree would have seen this disease. This tree was diseased. And anyone looking at this would have removed this tree knowing that it
including the property owner, correct?
Including the property owner, but the property owner isn't the one that altered the tree. Ohio Edison is the one that altered this tree, Chief Justice.
Well, you don't know that. You've just said that. The trial court does not know that. They said that. Justice Pfeiffer just read the language. So what I heard was, we don't know whether it was cut off or it broke off. So, I think we need to get beyond that. So if we're not looking at a theory of that the defendants created this initially, and again, you don't know when you're even talking about, 2001 or decades earlier. I mean, that's just unknown here. Getting back to the contract, which I think is the more important part of your argument, what in the contract indicates that there is the duty that is owed to a jogger in this situation?
The contract says that they're to do the work and for safety of all persons and all equipment.
And that it has been explained that that is an agreement between Ashland and Ohio Edison as to who bears the responsibility or the liability during the activity of dealing with the threatening vegetation. And it's not a forever obligation. It's between Ohio Edison and Ashland.
According to your interpretation then, Chief Justice, if they left the toolbox in the top of a tree and a year later that toolbox fell down, as long as they weren't there working at the time and that toolbox injured someone, that they wouldn't have any liability then. The point is that they are there, they're working on the trees, they're inspecting the trees, they can see the trees, and they have a duty to persons. And the contract is plain in its interpretation.
If we were to rule in your favor, what is the rule of law? Because you said there's some sort of compromise. You agree that they don't have the duty for all of these trees. What is the rule of law you would want us to write?
That when an entity alters a tree, when they go into a prescriptive easement or into any easement and they alter the tree and they materially injure the tree or affect its stability, that they have a duty when they're going through to inspect those trees, as opposed to just trees in general. There are difference in these trees. There's trees in general that they haven't touched that aren't affecting their power lines, and then there's trees that they've touched that are diseased, and we think that once they start a duty, they touch it, they own it, they break it, they should have the responsibility and not the general public. The duty you're putting on the general public then is every time you walk past a tree, you better be careful, because Ohio Edison doesn't have to worry if this tree falls. They only have to worry about the power lines.
Your proposition of law is that any tree that they trim in any fashion, they bear the liability in the future to any general public.
If that tree is diseased and we have evidence that they should have taken it down, yes.
If the tree's not diseased, they trim it.
They trim it.
Years later, something happens, it becomes diseased. Where does that liability start and end?
It depends on the facts of the case. Our expert in this case opined that in May of 2001, that anyone going by this tree would have seen it was diseased, that it was structurally weakened, and that it was going to fall and potentially fall. And the last point I'd like to add in the last 17 seconds is they want to make it like that there was no duty to this power line. That our expert does not say that. Our expert says that this could have also injured the power lines and fallen that way, and that would have changed all of the duties then concomitant with it. It fell northeast, didn't fall directly on the road. What catastrophically injured my client were the branches that were sticking out that fell. But the tree fell more towards the power line than it did towards the road. It was just the branches that were left out that hit her in catastrophic
Counsel, last evening there was a storm that came through Ohio with a lot of high wind. I imagine there were a lot of trees along the roadway where power lines were that were down. If a contract like this had been in place, is the tree trimmer and the power company liable for all damage that the falling trees created?
No. The liability that would be on them is if they damaged the tree to the extent that a normal summer storm would cause this tree to fall over, or just that the tree would fall over by disease, that they would have the obligation when they're going through, and if they had a chance to inspect yes.
So then before these trees are cleaned up, if they've caused damage, they need to be inspected to see whether they had previously been trimmed by the power company and were diseased?
That's what the contract calls for them to do presently, is to look for diseased trees and to see if there's any of it. Their only dispute with us is that they feel that their sole duty is to the power lines. And our position is you have a duty to the power lines, and if you damage a tree so much that it's going to fall over onto a playground or under a street, you have a duty to that also. It's not just to the power lines.
So the Ohio Edison or Ashland should be, even if they're not scheduled to trim vegetation, should constantly be monitoring the health of the trees that they've touched over the years.
No, if they're going through there, like they did here in May of 2001. I'm not saying there's a special duty on them.
May of 2001.
That's correct.
Okay, and this fell when?
This fell June 14th, 2004.
Okay, so for those 3 years, they should have been monitoring the health of this tree.
No, the facts do not support that. What the facts say that in May of 2001, when they were on this property, when they had taken down two trees by this tree, anyone looking at this tree would have looked at it and said, this tree is diseased and it needs to come down. But they made a determination it wasn't going to hit the power line, and they didn't care then whether it came down or not. It wasn't a concern to them.
Did they say that? Is that in the record? Is that in the record that we know it was diseased? We saw a diseased tree, and we said, what the heck, we're not going to even tell anybody about it because it's not going to fall within our power line.
That is a factual dispute in the case, Your Honor. We have evidence to suggest that they knew that, yes. But it's a factual dispute. We would never got that far.
Your expert says that they knew that this was diseased.
My client has evidence that they knew that there were diseased trees in this area, but we never got that far.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Delek, you attempted to reserve time, but unfortunately you went over. But I will give you 30 seconds.
Counsel, what kind of a tree was this?
This was a maple tree. It was about eight.
Soft maple?
I would say yes. It was over 100 years old. It was estimated after the accident to be in excess of 80-some feet tall. Two quick points I wanted to make, Your Honors, is in its opinion, even the Court of Appeals, at paragraph 20 said, it is undisputed that the tree was not a hazard to the power lines. That finding was never appealed. The plaintiff's gripe is that the tree was leaning away from the roadway that was, there weren't branches on one side, as Justice Piper pointed out. There was no one could figure out whether anybody had touched the tree or who had touched the tree. More importantly, even their own expert, Dr. Steiner, at page 88 of his deposition said, tree in and of itself leaning is not a hazard. They try to equate hazard, leaning with a hazard. It is not. Qualified, competent utility foresters went out there to protect Ohio Edison's facilities. They looked at this tree, and there is no evidence that they were aware or drew to Ohio Edison's attention any defect in this tree or any reason to remove it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take this matter under advisement, and you will be informed of our decision.